Ezekiel 39, verses 17 to 29. Verse 17, the sacrificial feast. Having considered in detail the cleansing of the land from the effects of the Gogian overthrow, we are now introduced to events that will take place some time after Christ has established his throne in Zion, where he will reign in the midst of his enemies. Psalm 110. The prophet describes the destruction of the princes of the earth and the horses and the chariots, mighty men of war, under the figure of a sacrificial feast to be offered upon God's table. An invitation is extended to every feathered fowl and every beast of the earth to attend this feast. These birds and beasts have already been introduced in connection with the overthrow of the Gogian hosts. Verse 4, we need now to ask, who are represented by these birds and beasts of prey who devoured Gog's armies and who now, in this new prophecy, are invited to God's sacrificial feast? Again, the prophecies of Balaam, which we have seen to be closely connected with these events, are helpful. In this section, which declares that Israel's king shall be higher than Agag, that is Gog, the prophecy states that Israel's kingdom shall be exalted. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of an unicorn. He shall eat up the nations his enemies and shall break their bones and pierce them through with his arrows. He couched. He lay down as a lion and as a great lion. Who shall stir him up? Blessed is he that blesseth thee, and cursed is he that curseth thee. This is Numbers 24. And this prophecy is a reversal of the process of Deuteronomy 28 and Zephaniah 1, which leads ultimately to the dry bones state described in chapter 37. For centuries, Israel has been the carcass, and the nations the birds and beasts of prey. And this is the change. And Israel would devour those who devoured them. Let Balaam speak again. This is Numbers 23. Behold, the people shall rise up as a great lion and lift up himself as a young lion. He shall not lie down until he eat of the prey and drink the blood of the slain. Israel at this time will be led by the lion of the tribe of Judah. He was represented in type by Cyrus, the conqueror of Babylon, for whom it was said, he is my shepherd and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. This is the work that in its fullness is yet to be done by Yahweh's anointed, the Lord Jesus Christ. He is the greater than Cyrus, and therefore in a greater sense than he is a ravenous bird from the east, the man that executeth my counsel from a far country. It's in Isaiah 46, verse 11. And note the reference to the far country in Luke 19. The use of this figure in Ezekiel 39 at verse 4 then is at the time of the overthrow of the Gogian armies. And here, on the occasion of God's invitation to his sacrificial feast, has led many commentators to regard these verses as simply another reference to the destruction of the military might of Gog. The book of Revelation provides the key to an interpretation of this section of Ezekiel. We've shown that the Gogian overthrow corresponds to the battle of that great day of God Almighty in Revelation 16, which takes place at the beginning of the seventh vial, and which is marked by the exclamation, quoting from Ezekiel 39 and verse 8, "It is done," and again Revelation 16 verse 17. These events, as we have seen, lead to the kingdom being proclaimed, a kingdom that will not be welcomed by many of the nations that survive Armageddon. When Jesus begins his reign, he will remove from his kingdom all that is unclean and offensive. And this will involve far more than the burial of Gog and the destruction of his weapons. Zechariah 13 says, "I will cut off the names of the idols out of the land, and they shall no more be remembered. And also, I will cause the prophets and the unclean spirit to pass out of the land." And thus the Jewish people brought face to face with their Redeemer will be cleansed from all their idols. It is inconceivable that the pagan monuments of the Gentiles will be left in place. And as we have already suggested, the upheavals associated with Gog's overthrow will cause most of the great demolition. All the churches, shrines, mosques, and so-called holy places will be removed from Messiah's kingdom, and all the priests and other practitioners of Gentile religion will be banished. In Psalm 2, we have the summary of the tremendous reaction among the nations. "The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us." Revelation chapters 17 to 19 provides an enlarged view of certain events subsequent to the establishment of the kingdom that will involve the crushing of all opposition to Messiah's reign. And here we learn that the focus of resistance to Christ's rule will be the Western European beast nations, of whom we are told, "The ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as kings 1 hour with the beast." A united Europe will rise up in opposition to Christ. And surely in the events now taking place, we are privileged to see the groundwork being prepared for this political movement. In Western Europe, things are moving rapidly in the direction of a federal superstate, and the constituent nations have one mind to give their power and strength unto the beast, and they will proclaim a holy war against the imagined usurper who has closed the holy places and banned false religion from the Holy Land. "These shall make war with the Lamb." This is not the situation that prevailed at the time of Gog's entry into the land. The events of Ezekiel 38 occur before Christ is in his kingdom. There, the object of aggression is the prosperous and peaceful Israel. The invader is Gog, who, having humiliated that proud people to the point where they say, "Our bones are dried up and our hope is lost. We are clean cut off," is taken by surprise in the appearance on the scene of Israel's king. In Revelation 17, the object of aggression is Christ, and the invader is the European beast power. And the outcome is clearly stated: "The Lamb shall overcome, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful." Revelation 19 presents us with further comment on this conflict between the beast with his kings of the earth and the King of Kings. The King of Kings is said to sit upon a white horse. His name is Faithful and True, and in righteousness he doth judge and make war. And as in Revelation 17, where the called and chosen and faithful are with the King of Kings, so here also in the prosecution of this war, he is accompanied by a multitude of individuals who are styled the armies which are in heaven. There's no doubt who these helpers are, for they are said to ride upon white horses and are clothed in fine linen, white and clean. And this fine linen, mentioned earlier at chapter 19, is the righteousness of saints. Thus, these armies of heaven which follow their illustrious leader into the conflict are the immortal saints. And the conflict itself is described in verse 19, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And again we note, as in chapter 17, it is the kings of the earth who initiate the conflict. They make war with the Lamb. And these events have reference to the crushing of the rebellion spoken of in the second psalm, as we have previously stated. And this is confirmed by the application to these events of words that have their basis in that psalm. The adversaries of the Lamb are styled the kings of the earth. Faced with omnipotence, these kings are soon subdued, and we learn he shall rule them with a rod of iron. The order of events suggested by this brief excursion into Revelation is the gathering of the nations to Armageddon, the overthrow of the Gogian-led hosts, the opposition to messianic rule from the kings of the earth, and the conflict between these kings of the earth and the King of Kings. We may now consider the significant words to be found at Revelation 19. The King of Kings and his armies having been described in verses 11 to 16 before the battle is enjoined at verses 19 and onwards. And we are told, I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great God, that ye may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on them, and the flesh of all men, both free and bond, both small and great. And this is a clear reference to Ezekiel 39. As the following table shows. And here we have two columns, Ezekiel 39, verse 17, and Revelation 19, verse 17, onwards. Ezekiel, speak unto every feathered fowl and to every beast of the field. Revelation, I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, in Ezekiel, we have assemble yourselves and come, gather yourselves on every side to my sacrifice that I do sacrifice for you, even a great sacrifice upon the mountains of Israel, that you may eat flesh and drink blood. And in Revelation, come, gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great God. In Ezekiel, ye shall eat the flesh of the mighty and drink the blood of the princes of the earth, of rams, of lambs, and of goats, of bullocks, all of them fatlings of Bashan, and ye shall eat till ye be full and drink blood till ye be drunken of my sacrifice which I have sacrificed for you. Revelation, that ye may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of mighty men. Ezekiel. Thus shall ye be filled at my table with horses and chariots, with mighty men, and with all men of war, saith the Lord God. And in Revelation, and the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on them, and the flesh of all men, both free and bond, both small and great. On the basis of scriptures previously advanced, these birds and beasts of prey include the nation of Israel, organized now as the people of Messiah's kingdom. And Zechariah speaks of that time. They, that is Judah, shall be as mighty men which tread down their enemies in the mire of the streets and the battle, and they shall fight because the Lord is with them. And the riders on horses shall be confounded. For the riders on horses to be confounded by the people of Judah is, in the apocalyptic language of Ezekiel, for Judah to be filled at my table with horses and chariots, mighty men, and with all men of war. The results of the sacrifices are stated. The heathen shall see my judgment that I have executed, and my hand that I have laid upon them. In these words, Ezekiel describes the conquest of the beast power that will arise in Europe to fill the vacuum left by the overthrow of the Gogian power. And from that table, we see that the invitation, assemble yourselves and come, finds its counterpart in Revelation. Come and gather yourselves together. And this is interesting in view of what follows. In the next section of Ezekiel 39, which has to do with the complete restoration of Israel, Christ and the saints, together with a remnant of Judah, that is the people in the land, will begin the establishment of the kingdom subsequent to the overthrow of Gog. And then will follow the call to the remaining tribes still scattered to return to the land. And Jeremiah speaks of this return. I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the coasts of the earth. A great company shall return thither, for I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Isaiah 2, having described how God will come to set his glory in the earth, that stand establish a sign in the middle of the nations, that is the kingdom proclaimed from Zion, relates how that the Jews, the still scattered, will be brought out of all nations upon horses and in chariots and in litters and upon mules and upon swift beasts to my holy mountain Jerusalem. That's Isaiah 66. The invitation in Ezekiel, assemble yourselves and come, may well be a call to the still scattered Jews to return to participate in the sacrificial judgment of nations. Verse 21, Israel restored. In the foregoing exposition, especially in the consideration of the restoration prophecies, the point has been made on a number of occasions that what we're seeing in the land of Israel today is not the full restoration of which the prophet speaks. It is indeed a wonderful sign that God is still working with his people, and that his purpose is moving towards its grand climax. But since from Ezekiel 38 it is clear that there has to be a nation in the land at the time of the Gogian invasion, it follows that what we have witnessed over the past century is an amazing sign of the times. What we see in the land today is a source of great encouragement, but there is a time of great trouble ahead for Israel when, if our exposition is correct, the modern state of Israel, after considerable local success in her confrontation with the Arabs, will be overthrown by the Gogian invader to become a valley of dry bones, a nation in despair which cries, "Our hope is lost." And the appearing of Christ in the political arena will begin the final restoration process. And first he will save the remnant of Judah, and then he will proceed to restore the whole nation in all the fullness of the repeated messages of the prophets. And all these things we have tried to show in the exposition, and these final verses appear to confirm that this approach is correct. We will select a few points in summary. Verse 25, "Now will I bring again," is after the overthrow of the Gogian invasion, while Christ faces the opposition of the other nations. 2, "Have mercy upon the whole house of Israel," refers not to just the Jews in the land. The subject of this great restoration is all the tribes of Israel. This is confirmed by the apostle in Romans 11. Quoting from Isaiah 59, he refers to the manifestation of Messiah to the nation of Israel. "There shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. For this is my covenant unto them, when I shall take away their sins." And this time he refers to as the time when all Israel shall be saved. This reference to all Israel is directing us to the time when the words of Ezekiel we are considering will be fulfilled. "Now will I have mercy upon the whole house of Israel," elsewhere referred to as Israel and Judah, for example in Jeremiah 30. 3, "After that they have borne their shame and all their trespasses, whereby they have trespassed against me, when they dwelt safely in their land," verse 26. Their trespasses today are evident. They will continue to withhold from the Almighty the service that is his. After they attain the position of safety in the land, which our consideration of chapters 35 to 38 leads us to expect, and for this they will bear their shame at the hands of Gog. So these verses speak of a time after the Gogian invasion. Verse 27, "and am sanctified in them," points to the establishment of the kingdom by Messiah when God's sanctuary is in the midst of them. That's in chapter 37 and verse 28. 5, "have left none of them any more there." This is verse 28. This is conclusive. "Have left none of them any more there." It shows that the restoration spoken of here is the final restoration by Messiah, the restoration of all Israel, both Israel and Judah, when there will be no Jews left scattered among the nations. 6, "neither will I hide my face any more from them," verse 29, again shows that this must be after the overthrow of Gog. It is the time of Jeremiah 30 when, says God, "I will break his yoke from off thy neck, will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him, but they shall serve the Lord their God, and David their king, whom I will raise up unto them." 7, verse 29, "I have poured out my spirit upon them," This, as we saw in our consideration of chapter 37, is reference to the bringing of Israel into the bond of the covenant. When they accept the truth in Jesus. And so this series of prophecies comes to a close with a brief picture of Israel's restoration at the hand of Messiah and his brethren. And we're directed by this final prophecy to anticipate the time when the seed of Abraham will possess the gate of his enemies, when God's glory manifest in the king and his immortal princes will come to rest in the midst of Israel, and resting there, verse 21, will shine out with irresistible splendor to the nations of the earth. The remaining chapters of Ezekiel's prophecy are so full of fascinating detail of the divine arrangements that will be introduced in the earth at the establishment of the kingdom that they warrant a separate volume, a task to which we may set our hands if the Lord remains away. Meanwhile, we rejoice in the clear signs that the prophecies of Ezekiel are being fulfilled. While we see ahead a time of trouble, both for Israel and the nations, yet we can see beyond the blackness and look with great anticipation for the dawn of Zion's glad morning.